Today we're going to be looking at 2 Kings chapter 5. This is an account about Naaman the Syrian and being healed from leprosy, and then also the part about Gehazi and the judgment for his evil attitude and actions. 2 Kings chapter 5. Now Naaman, commander of the army of the king of Syria, was a great and honorable man in the eyes of his master, because by him the Lord had given victory to Syria. He was also a mighty man of valor, but a leper. And the Syrians had gone out on raids and had brought back captive a young girl from the land of Israel. She waited on Naaman's wife. Then she said to her mistress, "If only my master were with the prophet who is in Samaria, for he would heal him of his leprosy." And Naaman went in and told his master, saying, "Thus and thus said the girl who is from the land of Israel." Then the king of Syria said, "Go now, and I will send a letter to the king of Israel." So he departed and took with him 10 talents of silver, 6,000 shekels of gold, and 10 changes of clothing. Then he brought the letter to the king of Israel, which said, "Now be advised, when this letter comes to you, that I have sent Naaman my servant to you, that you may heal him of his leprosy." And it happened, when the king of Israel read the letter, that he tore his clothes and said, "Am I God, to kill and make alive, that this man sends a man to me to heal him of his leprosy? Therefore, please consider and see how he seeks a quarrel with me." So it was, when Elisha the man of God heard that the king of Israel had torn his clothes, that he sent to the king, saying, "Why have you torn your clothes? Please let him come to me, and he shall know that there is a prophet in Israel." Then Naaman went with his horses and chariots, and he stood at the door of Elisha's house. And Elisha sent a messenger to him, saying, "Go and wash in the Jordan 7 times, and your flesh shall be restored to you, and you shall be clean." But Naaman became furious and went away and said, "Indeed, I said to myself, he will surely come out to me and stand and call on the name of the Lord his God and wave his hand over the place and heal the leprosy. Are not the Abana and the Pharpar, the rivers of Damascus, better than all the waters of Israel? Could I not wash in them and be clean?" So he turned and went away in a rage. And his servants came near and spoke to him and said, "My father, if the prophet had told you to do something great, would you not have done it? How much more then when he says to you, 'Wash and be clean'?" So he went down and dipped 7 times in the Jordan, according to the saying of the man of God, and his flesh was restored like the flesh of a little child, and he was clean. And he returned to the man of God, he and all his aides, and came and stood before him, and he said, "Indeed, now I know that there is no God in all the earth except in Israel. Now, therefore, please take a gift from your servant." But he said, "As the Lord lives, before whom I stand, I will receive nothing." And he urged him to take it, but he refused. So Naaman said, "Then, if not, please let your servant be given 2 mule loads of earth, for your servant will no longer offer either burnt offering or sacrifice to other gods, but to the Lord. Yet in this thing may the Lord pardon your servant, when my master goes into the temple of Rimmon to worship there, and he leans on my hand, and I bow down in the temple of Rimmon. When I bow down in the temple of Rimmon, may the Lord please pardon your servant in this thing." Then he said to him, "Go in peace." So he departed from him a short distance. You can see that Naaman really is a very high-ranking individual. The king of Syria is a person who really wants to see him healed. He's a commander of the army, and he is highly regarded by his king because of what God had done through him. We are so inclined to be regarding people in terms of the person himself. And we need to think more clearly about some of that and think about what God has done. Get our attention on God instead of just on a person. He's an outstanding warrior, but he has this one major problem, and that is that he is a leper. Now, this little girl, she was a victim of Syrian raids. People had come in and attacked their country, and she was carried away captive. She's a slave. She's far from home. But notice, she evidently loved her captor. It's very likely that she had been treated kindly. And so even though he was the supreme commander who had taken her from her parents, she wanted him to be healed. And she had faith. She was utterly confident that such healing was available and possible. Now, we tend to think of some things sometimes. We say, well, I know God could do this, but we lack the confidence whether he will do that. There is a difference. And this little girl was not only confident in God's ability to do something, she was confident that he was willing to do such a thing. And so she wished that he could be with the prophet in Samaria because she was confident that that prophet could heal him. So this delegation goes to Israel, verses 5 to 7. It's a grandiose trip full of their own resources. There's a letter from the king to the king. 10 talents of silver, 6,000 shekels of gold, 10 changes of clothing. Now notice, this pagan king approached the wrong source. He wanted the king to heal Naaman. That's typical of humanity. Focus on human strength, human opportunities, human connections, instead of on God. We are very much tending to do that kind of thing. Even as Christians, we tend to do that. And it may be that this king had the pagan notion that the other king could dictate to his prophets and tell them to use their miraculous powers in a certain way. You know, it's like, this is my prophet, okay, I'll tell him do this. You see, that again is a pagan kind of attitude. In God's system, the prophet is supremely accountable to God, and that made it so that he could speak to the king when the king needed to be spoken to. He could contradict the king and speak to him God's words that, you know, Mr. King, you are not doing what God tells you to do. If he had been under the jurisdiction of the king, he couldn't have said those things with the kind of clarity. And so you notice in the Old Testament, as you read through the prophets and the accounts of the prophets are getting their direction from God, not the king. And in fact, many times they say things that the king doesn't like and doesn't want. Well, this king of Israel demonstrates his own incompetence. The identity of this king, the text doesn't even mention his name. And that tells us something. The most prominent man in the kingdom, from a human standpoint, is not where the real action is. And that is true in many, many situations. The person who is, in an earthly sense, the most prominent is not where the key actions are happening. The key actions are always with the person who is truly following God deeply. Now, obviously there are some special actions. For example, Cyrus was a pagan king that God moved to do certain things for the benefit of his people. So that was a key action. But as a general statement, the real key to what is happening is what God is doing through those who are truly devoted to him. So this king is hopeless. He rent his clothes. He's like, what in the world is this man trying to do? Is he just trying to pick a quarrel with me? Now, he was correct in viewing the request as something that only God could solve. But he was incorrect in assuming that Syria was trying to have an excuse to go to battle. Notice that he had no concept of turning to God for the solution that he knew only God could provide. So many times people fall into that trap. You know, it's like, well, they might know God can do this, but then they don't turn to God to avail themselves of his ability to do that thing. Instead, they are trying to do it some other way. And here again, you can see that there was very clear knowledge concerning the true God in the leadership of Israel. In other words, this man, he knew about the true God. He knew that God could actually heal this situation that was impossible for them to heal. But his rebellion against God made it inappropriate for him to approach God with a request. You know, there are many people in that kind of situation. Because they rebel against God, they are not inclined to approach God with a request. As a contrast, the spiritual person would see this as an opportunity for God's glory. And so the account moves to Elisha, And when Elijah hears about this, he rebukes the king for his faithlessness. And so the king sends Naaman to Elisha. And notice that Elisha doesn't even appear in person to Naaman. He just sends a message. Go wash in the Jordan 7 times and you'll be healed. Now, if he had sent Naaman to wash in a Syrian river, Naaman and the others may have thought that the false gods of Syria had somehow produced the healing. Because remember, the pagan notion is the gods are local. So in Syria, they have their gods. In Mesopotamia, they have their gods. In Israel, they have their gods. And so if he went to Syria and got healed there, maybe those gods had something to do with it. Or they probably did. What would the God of Israel have to do with it? The prophet could have just been telling him, go to that place and be healed. And that's the place that's under the jurisdiction of those gods. Now, notice how this relates to the intimate alignment that Elijah has with God. Without making any accusation, he unveils the perversion in Naaman's heart. He says, go wash in the Jordan. What do you think of that direction? Well, Naaman had very strong ideas about that. He thought that was terrible. That was ridiculous. But not only that, he thought it was ridiculous that this prophet didn't come out to meet him. After all, he is a very important person. He's a commander of the army. You see, Naaman was very naturally strengthened in his pride by his exalted position. When you have an exalted position, you have a great opportunity to fall into pride. And so, here he has pride in his heart. And in fact, the construction in Hebrew is very emphatic. It's like saying, behold, I said to myself, to me he will surely come out. You see, it brings that up to the front. To me he will surely come out. In other words, I am this important person. Certainly he would come out to me. And he isn't even coming out to me. I'm insulted. You know, the more effective we are, Elisha was a very effective man. The more effective we are, the more we must point people away from ourselves to God. And Elisha was doing that. He wanted this man to know that it was God who was doing this. It wasn't that he did something just right, that he waved his hand just right, said the right words, those kind of things. You see, God had prepared this situation, this leprosy, God had prepared as an act of love and mercy for Naaman's soul. And Elisha is not going to ruin it. Now, I don't know how much Elisha understood about all these details, but it's very clear that he is following God's directions. See, that's the important thing to remember. Elisha is very clearly following God's directions. And so Naaman is very proud, and he thinks this inferior person should pay proper respects. He's furious. He expects the prophet to come in person. And he expects some special religious rites, you know, wave your hand over the place. And it's almost like a magical view of things. You know, we can easily have a magical view of things sometimes too. And he thought the terms were ridiculous anyway. I mean, after all, there's some rivers in my home country that are cleaner and better than Jordan. Jordan, that river, dip yourself in there 7 times? Yuck! You know, that's how we tend to think sometimes, isn't it? Our own natural resources are held in higher regard than God's offer of provision. God says, go wash in the Jordan 7 times. Forget it! I'm not going to do that. I have better rivers to wash in. And besides, why can't I be blessed by changing the directions just a little bit? I mean, okay, I'll wash in a river if that's what it takes. But if that's what it takes, I'll wash in a different river. I'm going to choose the river. You see the attitude there? It says, I don't like exactly what God says. I mean, I like 90% of it. Yes, that's a great idea. I'd like to wash 7 times. Sure, I'd wash 10 times if I had to. I'll wash 10 times and be saved, 10 times and be cleansed, 10 times and be fixed. I'll be glad to do that, but not in the Jordan. No way. You know, that's the same attitude that many professing Christians have in relation to the Bible. I agree with a lot of it. But what it says in that passage right there, I don't agree with it. I don't think it's necessary. I'm not going to do that. You see how that's the same basic attitude of haughtiness against God. What he's doing is he's missing the point. It is faith in God, not faith in a certain procedure. So he went off in a rage. But his servants came to him. Now, the fact that his servants came to him when he was angry says something about Naaman's character, something good. In other words, they realized that if they approached him right, he would give their words a fair listening. So they came and they said, look, what if that man had told you something really hard to do? You would have done it. Because they knew that this man was a mighty man of valor. They knew that he would do whatever it took to get a hard job done. And so if he had been told, all right, what you have to do is this difficult task, he would have bent every effort to do it. So, just do this. And this man was smart enough and humble enough to take their advice. Now you see, that shows that there is a basic good character in his life, that even though he made this big public mistake, when his servants came from a lowly position and said to him, you know what, you made a mistake, he thought to himself, I did make a mistake. That was really stupid. I'm going to go wash. And so he followed God's prescription exactly, and he went where? He went down to the Jordan. He's humbling himself. I mean, the symbolism is marvelous. He had to go down. I mean, literally down. Down to the Jordan. And then not only that, he had to go into the river. And just imagine. Dipping. Looking. Dipping. Looking. Dipping. Looking. Dipping. Looking. Dipping. Looking. 7 times. And finally the 7th time. Yes! And it was not merely restoration. It was God's abundance, new like a child. Now, he has a whole new understanding of God. He returns to Elisha, and notice this time, Elisha went out to meet him in person. Do you see the difference? Here's Elisha at the beginning, did not go out to meet him, because that's part of God's purpose to help this man have the right understanding. It's not some magical power of this prophet. It's not some special rite that he does. It is God's power. And Elisha is in tune with God, and so he is not going out, even though he's going to be misunderstood by it. Then when he comes back, he goes out to meet him. You see, this Naaman was not like the 9 lepers who thanklessly went on when they were healed. He understood that God had done the healing. And notice, when he comes back, he refers to himself as Elisha's servant. See, before it was like, to me, isn't he coming out to me? I'm a big shot. Now he's saying, I'm your servant. That's quite a statement for this powerful commander. He realizes that this wasn't some special gift from the prophet. He realizes the prophet simply told him what God wanted him to do. Oh, what a difference it is. So many people want to tell people, this is my advice to you. Now, if you follow my advice, do this, 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 it'll turn out well for you. You know what we ought to be doing? Pointing out what God says in his word so they begin to understand God so they can make decisions on their own. But guess what? You don't become famous as the giver of good advice then, do you? And so he realizes that this is actually the only God in the earth. Just imagine that. Because Elisha handled himself properly according to the dictates of the Spirit that is giving him directions. This man is suddenly in a new mode in terms of religion. He comes from a pagan background which had many gods and local gods, and now he suddenly has a whole new idea, and there's one God. This is the only real God. And so he wants to express his gratitude to the true God by giving a gift to the person who told him about the true God. And Elisha refused the gift. Now, would it have been wrong for Elisha to have accepted the gift? That's really a trick question. Because it would be wrong if the Spirit directed Elisha to not receive the gift. But it's not wrong, per se, to receive the gift. You see? Because sometimes God expects people to give a gift to the one who has ministered to them. The Apostle Paul said, the law says you shall not muzzle the ox who treads out the grain. And he applied that to spiritual teachers and spiritual teachers receiving physical benefits. But it's very clear from this passage that Elisha was following God's directions to not receive the gift. And so it would have been wrong for him to receive it. So do you understand that difference there? We've got to start understanding you obey God in his word in detail. But then there are some things that are not wrong in themselves, but it would be wrong in this instance to do because the Spirit is directing you otherwise. Not that the Spirit ever contradicts the Bible. And so he wanted to give a gift to Elisha, and Elisha said no. Then he exhibits his determination to only worship God. He wants to build a proper altar and worship only the Lord. Well, now remember, here's a man who's been operating in a pagan religion all his life. And so his ideas about how to worship God are going to be based on all that he knows about how gods operate. And so he wants to take dirt from the land of Israel so that he can build an altar out of dirt from Israel so that he can be worshiping the true God properly. Now, we know that it doesn't take dirt from one part of the country to another so that a person could worship God properly. But you see what this man is doing? He has gotten a whole new insight who really is the God and the only one that's worth worshiping. And so in light of that insight, he wants to do it the best he knows how. And that is to have dirt for an altar from that God's land so that he can do it. Now, how do you think God looks at that? You see, God is taking that man right from where he is. And so, he wants that. And he's concerned about something else. Well, you know, I go with my master, who evidently was not in too good a health. When he goes to worship his false god, I go with him into the temple. And so I'm going to need to bow down when I'm doing that. Forgive me for that, because I know who the true God is now. And what's Elisha say? Go in peace. In other words, he's taking this man right from where he is. You see, the man immediately, in terms of his whole new understanding of God, he is seeing implications of this in his life, and he's trying to apply it the best he knows how. Now, isn't that something we need to learn? You know, at each stage in your life, you need to apply the best you know how the new understanding that God gives you by His Spirit and by His Word. And so, Elisha grants him peace. In other words, God's focus is on the heart, not on the outward appearance. And that brings us to the next part. Naaman went away. He hadn't gone very far. You see that in verse 19. And Gehazi, the servant of Elisha, the man of God, said, "Look, my master has spared Naaman this Syrian, while not receiving from his hands what he brought. But as the Lord lives, I will run after him and take something from him." Notice the terminology. As the Lord lives, I will take something. Oh, how confused people get. They are acquainted with God. They are doing God's work. Gehazi was helping Elisha do God's work. And he's saying, as the Lord lives, and yet he's going to do something that is contrary to the Lord's commandments and to the Lord's way of doing things. You see, it was very important for Elisha to not receive a gift, because it was important that Naaman understood that healing was a free gift from a generous God. It wasn't that you had to pay a certain big amount and then God said, okay, that's good enough, I'll do it. But not only that, it was very important for Elisha to not receive the gift because it was going to produce the opportunity to expose the evil of Gehazi's heart and to judge it. Now, it's very likely that Elisha didn't necessarily know all these details. The Spirit of God does not tell us all the implications of why He directs us to do certain things in certain times. But notice that this passage shows the importance of walking with God to know when not to do legitimate things. Because not taking that gift was important for opening up Naaman's understanding about God, who He is and how He operates. And also it was important for unveiling the evil of Gehazi's heart in his greed and his dishonesty. But now, Gehazi decides, my master didn't take a gift. I am going to take a gift. And he resorts to lying to get it. Now, it may be that two new prophets had just come. It says here that he pursued Naaman, verse 21. When Naaman saw him running after him, he got down from the chariot to meet him and said, is all well? And he said, all is well. My master has sent me, saying, indeed, just now two young men of the sons of the prophets have come to me from the mountains of Ephraim. Please give them a talent of silver and two changes of garments. Now, I think the whole thing was a fabrication, but it's possible that just recently somebody would have come. Clearly, Elisha had not sent for money. And what he says is, please give them a talent of silver and two changes of garments. Now, because we do not do our transactions in talents of silver, we tend to not realize what kind of money this is talking about. You might like to glance at 1 Chronicles 19, verse 6. In 1 Chronicles 19, verse 6, it tells about that in the time of David, which would have been a number of years earlier, 1,000 talents were sufficient to hire 32,000 chariots and horsemen for battle. So if you have 1,000 talents are sufficient to hire 32,000 chariots and horsemen, that would mean one talent would hire 32 chariots and horsemen for battle. That's how much a talent is worth. If you look at 2 Chronicles 25, verse 6, 2 Chronicles 25, verse 6, you find that in the time of Amaziah, the son of Joash, 100 talents were sufficient to hire 100,000 valiant warriors. 100 talents were sufficient to hire 100,000 valiant warriors, which means one talent would be sufficient to hire 1,000 warriors. So you see, these numbers are making sense here, because one talent could hire 32 chariots and horsemen for battle. That's more heavy-duty equipment. Or a talent could hire 1,000 valiant warriors, and it isn't all the same time period, but it gives you some idea. And so Naaman said, oh, we'll take 2 talents. Now, you know what happens to people who tell lies? One lie told usually produces a platform that calls for another lie to be told. He lied to Naaman. He got the money. And then he came in to Elisha. And Elisha says, where did you go? Oops. What does Gehazi say? Oh, I didn't go anywhere. He lied. And then Elisha's answer shows how big the funds were that he got. You see, Naaman's men helped carry the stuff, and then he stored it away in the house, and they departed. And Gehazi told Elisha, I didn't go anywhere. Verse 26, then he said to him, did not my heart go with you when the man turned back from his chariot to meet you? Is it time to receive money and to receive clothing, olive groves and vineyards, sheep and oxen, male and female servants? You see, if you have money that could hire 1,000 valiant warriors, you could buy a lot of other stuff with that money. And Elisha's answer helps us see what kind of request it was. Don't you wonder what Naaman thought about these sons of the prophets, why they needed so much money? But notice, Gehazi, as is often the case, disaster comes from a totally unexpected direction. You see, he thought he could get by. He didn't expect he would be found out. He thought he could do this. I'll run after him. I'll get some stuff. I'll hide it away at a certain place, and Elisha never needs to know. But besides, if I do get found out, he might disrebuke me. Or he might dismiss me. But who cares? I'm all set. I mean, I'll have money for vineyards and olive gardens and servants and all that. That'll be great. So it'll be worth it. Now, notice what happened. At first, it seemed like it worked. He goes running toward the chariot. Naaman sees him. He stops the chariot, comes down, says, oh, what you want? Well, you know, something happened and we could use some money after all. Oh, come on, take twice as much. That sounds great. He sent servants along to help him carry the stuff. But you know what the problem was? God saw it all. What if you knew that every minute of every day, Jesus was physically standing right beside you? Would your attitude and actions and priorities and all of that, would they change? It is so easy for us to forget that God sees everything. It's very obvious that Gehazi had, in essence, forgotten that. And you know what God does? In one of the prophets, it says, God does nothing but what he reveals it to his servants, the prophets. God has a pattern of telling his servants, the ones who are really listening to what God says, he has a pattern of telling them stuff that they couldn't know otherwise and that other people don't find out. Do you remember the story of the old blind prophet that Jeroboam's wife came to, disguising herself so that she could find out what's going to happen to her sick child? God told him ahead of time who was coming. And he said that the wife of Jeroboam is going to come, and she's going to be disguising herself as another woman. Notice her disguise didn't mean a thing because the prophet was blind anyway. But that didn't matter because God was speaking into his ear. And so when she got right to the door, he says, "Come in, wife of Jeroboam. Why do you disguise yourself as another woman? I've got bad news for you." You see, God tells his servants things that other people don't know. And so God told Elisha what the deal was. Elisha knew without even seeing what happened. And then he lied to God's prophet. Where have you been? Nowhere. I didn't go anywhere. You know what that's equivalent to? If you lie to God's prophet, as God's prophet is speaking God's message, you are lying to God. Reminds you of Ananias and Sapphira, doesn't it? "Did you sell the land for so much?" "Yep, that's how much we sold it for." You lied to God. No wonder the severe judgment came on Gehazi. Now, I'm sure that when Gehazi was making his plans to get some money off of Naaman, he had no idea that his greed would be the key for him getting leprosy. It's interesting that Gehazi's leprosy was apparently worse than Naaman's. Elisha said, "Therefore the leprosy of Naaman shall cling to you and your descendants forever." And he went out from his presence leprous as white as snow. You see, when you go back and look at the account, it looks like Naaman just had an afflicted spot. But Gehazi has extensive leprosy. And I know we might wonder, why were his descendants afflicted? I don't have a definitive answer to give on all those things. It's one of the things that are in the Bible that sometimes people stumble over. But remember this, we do not have much information about the details of this. We don't know what all was going on, how much his descendants were adults that were in collusion with him in this project. We don't know all those things. And so we know enough about God and his word to know that he is trustworthy and wise and good, and we have no business judging him on what he does. But if you're inclined in that way, God has written the Bible in a deliberate way so that you can find these things to have a condemning attitude toward God and then go to hell. You see, God has written the Bible deliberately in a way that if you want to find something to stumble over, you will be able to find it. Now notice, Gehazi's greed ruined the testimony that God had prepared for this high-ranking official, that God's healing was free. So no wonder Gehazi's punishment was living death. You know, Gehazi now had all this stuff. There's no evidence that Elisha took it away from him. Okay, you have your stuff. But he isn't going to enjoy it. God is known for the judgments he hands out. This perfection of judgment. You know, this is far more devastating than something Elisha could have devised. You see, God is not unaware of evil. But God in his goodness gives men opportunity to repent, and he gives them opportunity to display what is an unrepentant evil heart. Either one. You know, some lessons we can learn. Naaman, often we are highly regarded by others because of what God has done through us. And that does show the folly of pride, doesn't it? Naaman's heart was proud, but you know something? God gives opportunity for repenting. You don't have to stay that way. And Naaman humbled himself. He became teachable. And God blessed him. Gehazi's heart was greedy. He could have repented, but instead he lied to cover it up and increased his guilt and received God's judgment. And then Elisha's heart. Elisha hears God speak, and he knows how to respond in different ways to different situations that cannot be known which way would be right unless you're hearing God speak. You see, these stories in Kings are not just stories. They are full of aspects that teach us more about humanity and more about God. May the Lord bless you. So, for next time, next chapter.